Welcome to the second ever episode on the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. My name is Gary Fox. Today I have a fascinating chat with Tommy Courtney, the CEO and founder of Prello. Prello is an employee relocation service here in Dublin and operating across the globe. Tommy is just one of those born entrepreneurs and an absolute no-nonsense businessman. It was a fascinating chat. I learned a huge amount, so I hope you enjoy it. Tom, how are you? Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. How are things?
Things are good. You're the very first guest
on the
Entrepreneur Experiment.
We're starting at the low base.
So no pressure.
Anybody want to do a podcast? Yes, me, please.
No pressure. But that's actually a good point in terms of starting off something is to do it with people you know and friends of yours so you're not feeling mad pressure. I think that's definitely helpful. You're under time pressure, so we'll jump straight in. So Tom, who are you and why are you here?
Jesus, who am I? Who am I? So Tommy Courtney. Background, I suppose, is product management, business analysis, apologies. And then I decided to give up that old steady, nice salary life to go off like a fucking agent and try and start off my own company. So that's what I did. And thankfully, it's going okay.
Okay, well, so we'll get the kind of status update on that towards the end and figure out where you are. The whole thing about the Entrepreneur Experiment is taking people through what I've identified as six stages. So how did you, first of all, how do you come up with ideas in general? Like you're a born entrepreneur, obviously, but how do you come up with ideas in general? And how did you come up with the idea for Property Base Camp?
Do you know, I was actually thinking about this last night because I'm a desperate one for ideas. I'm always constantly thinking of ideas. If it's not for my own business or if it's for some other business that in the future I'll start them. I actually say it's a bit of an affliction. It's not really a good thing. I actually think that I must give you the link to a podcast. I think you've seen it, the Joe Rogan one with the neuroscientist about sleep patterns.
No, I saw you post on social about it but I haven't actually.
It blew my mind essentially because what it was effectively saying is, I'm paraphrasing here, but 30% performance decrease if you're not getting your 8 hours sleep. So I just don't get that. And I used to think, oh, it's a badge of honor. Aren't I fantastic? That's sort of the outcomes of lying awake at night and thinking of, it's probably where I do my best ideation phase is lying down, flat, dark room, and literally constantly thinking of different ideas. So that's sort of where, I guess, what I'm like every night. But in regards to the business that I did start, like probably similar to most others, it was just an experience that I seen happening in my work life. So the company I was working for, as I said, MTT, we were hiring lots of talent from around the world and relocating them into Dublin, and there was no real support or guidance or anywhere for them to go to actually help them with that process. So that's sort of where the idea came from. I think that's generally of from what I've heard as well, is it's just life experience. Sometimes these things are staring at you in the face. We were actually chatting about it earlier on. The business, I always wanted to start a business. I just didn't know what that was. So I think until you actually make that step and actually decide I'm going to start something, you need to have some sort of trigger point and your business will grow and pivot or change.
The famous pivot.
So I think you have to want to do it. And I think that's sort of where it all sort of started from. With me anyway.
You've brought that on lovely. You can tell you're probably brought that on lovely to the next section. How did you then, what was the next step in terms of, did you build a rough idea or how did you then take the next step?
Yeah, so again, first time founder, can you swear on this?
Yeah, swear away.
Having a fucking clue what I was at and still don't have a fucking clue what I'm at. But again, you don't know where to start. So what I did do though is I didn't just quit my job and go off and say I'm going to start a business. I worked on it evenings, weekends, constantly for the first 6 months. Again, I probably was lucky enough that my background was in product management, so I knew, I guess, a decent amount about analysing market trends and dealing with technology teams and understanding, I guess, the basics. I wouldn't say I'm a technologist, but I understand what's out in the market and how different things work. So the initial stage was all about business model canvassing. So again, I'm sure you know about it as well, but some listeners mightn't. It's effectively just one canvas that gets your idea out of your brain onto a piece of paper. Just looks at the different customers that you could be dealing with, your touch points, you're dealing with the value proposition that you're bringing to each customer. And off the back of that, you'll have a whole list of assumptions that you basically need to go and prove are true. So that was, I guess I knew a little bit about that. There's a really brilliant website and resource called Strategizer, which I'm sure you can put it up on the notes too. It's really, really, I'm a very simple creature. I like things simple. Business model canvas is so simple. It's literally just getting the stuff out of your brain onto a piece of paper, and then it starts to make a little bit more sense. So that was the first stage. Then I guess I reached out to a couple of my colleagues at the time who to see if they would have any interest in going into a startup together. We did a little bit with that and really just took it from there. That was where it all started.
And just an interesting point you made there. Why not go as a sole founder, or would you, you know, what's your kind of thoughts on sole founders versus starting with people you know or certain people you don't know?
Great question. It's really, again, you don't know what you don't know, first of all. Obviously, when you're a first time founder, you don't realize what, I guess, the stresses and strains of doing it and the volume of work that's needed. And you have to realize, I suppose, well, I realized pretty quickly that first of all, I'm not an engineer, I can't code. So that's one thing. So I knew there's a bit of a gap there. I have a very big emphasis, I guess, on our product long-term being a consumer-facing product. So I knew I needed a designer at some stage. So it's really just looking at, I guess, what my weaknesses are. And again, that's probably just evolved, because to be honest, I didn't know what my weaknesses were. I didn't really know what my strengths were. Still, that's probably a constant battle, I think, of understanding what you're good at and what you're shit at, and getting people around you that are better than what you are. So that's sort of why I went initially with the team. The team has changed quite significantly since I started. But again, I guess it's just looking at, I don't like giving advice because I'm still going through the process myself, but just looking at what your weaknesses are and doubling down on your strengths, then knowing what you are good at and basically taking it from there then.
I think I think you've nailed it there. It's hard to know what you don't know.
Yeah. What about you though? Because you started, you're a solopreneur. So
yeah, take that. I'd done both ways. So I had done it with co-founders before, and we all kind of like, you know, did the whole business model canvas and plugged in what we thought we needed. And we just overthought it, really. We really, really overthought it and tried to cover all the gaps first.
Yeah. I don't actually think though you need, for the initial sort of ideation stage, figuring out if, because obviously a lot of people go through, Jesus, is this a business? I don't really know if this is. I don't think you need a balanced team at that point. You just need to go out and prove that your idea is actually, there's a product market fit there. So I think it's only really after that point. And again, it depends on what you want it to be. If it's a technology-based company, you're probably going to need somebody who's maybe an engineer or something. If it's a service-based, or kind of a mixture of both. If it's service-based, you might need anybody who, from a technology point of view, you might just need a salesperson or an operations person. So again, there's a timing issue there as well. And again, that's one of the learnings that I would have took anyway from just going through the process.
Yeah, I think at this stage, so let's say we're in stage two, idea prototyping. I think at this stage, you just need to do something. You just need to get a raw, bare bones website up there and see.
You need to talk to people. Like, that's, you have, again, I guess the beauty of the business model canvas and the value proposition canvas, which I think you're going to put up, but you're going to have so many things that's going to come out of that you need to be proven true for your business to have a product market fit. So until you go out and talk to people in the industry or talk to competitors, which is really difficult, because you probably don't want to talk to competitors, but you're talking to them, and seeing what they know about the industry and what they think of your product, and even just saying to them, yeah, look, I've got this idea. Is there potential maybe to work with you, or what do you think of the idea? So that's something that we're doing, I guess, more of recently. And again, I think that comes with a little bit more once you can start to get that market validation and customers are telling you, obviously the best validation is by getting customers, and that gives you more confidence that you're on the right track and there is a need for it in the market, and basically take it from there then.
We've actually moved on to idea testing there without even kind of noticing, just we've naturally moved on to idea testing. So yeah, talk to people. I think there's a real fear about your idea not working. I think there's a real fear in terms of people saying to you, actually, Tom, that's been done. Actually, have you met this guy? He done it 2 years ago.
Yeah, or making you, like, is it, there's a potential issue there that you could be like, oh, Jesus, I'm going to look stupid if somebody laughs at me. And that's another 100%. Thing.
Yeah.
That's another thing I found. People, not everybody's going to think that your business is legit, or not that it's not legit, but that there's a need for it. That might mean you're talking to the wrong people, or it might just mean you're talking to the right people and there mightn't be a product market fit there for you. So I suppose that's the balancing act there.
That's exactly it. I think don't talk to one person. Don't talk to your mom. Talk to hundreds of people, because there are people who are going to say, Tom, that's absolutely shite, and that'll really dishearten you. And then there are people that'll blow smoke and say, this is the best idea in the world. And it's only when you kind of put them all into the mixer and you get a 70-30 kind of feedback in terms of, well, most people thought it was right. And I think, to be honest, it's just to launch is the key thing, because you can talk to as many people as you want, but it's only, I'm sure you found this as well, it's only when you put, you know, rubber to road that people actually will pay you for your service.
Yeah.
That's the only time you'll ever know if it's going to work.
And we, like for us, like the first client that we managed to get into the room with was Google. So at the time I was like, well, this is a piece of piss. Like Google wanted to talk to us already. So like, this is easy. And they were like, how much do you charge?
Yeah.
And we had no fucking clue. Yeah. We were like, oh, we charge $1,000 per employee who we help relocate. So they were like, that's okay. And then I was like, come out of that meeting going, this is unreal. I'm going to be a millionaire very, very quickly. But this whole business thing is a piece of piss. Obviously, it doesn't work out like that. So I guess until you talk to them and say, they say, whoa, that's pretty expensive. And the likelihood is most customers are going to go, oh, that's too expensive. So you just need to sort of find your range.
Or even worse, too cheap.
Too cheap too,
and you lock yourself in.
Yeah,
I did that
at
the start. Again, you made a great point. Look at your competitors, because they've already figured it out.
Yeah.
Mostly. Now, not all in the house. I don't fall down blindly. But yeah, I looked at competitors all over the world and kind of looked at kind of the average of their model. I launched loads of stuff. So we had loads of products at the start and then started paring it back. Or like, we were too cheap. We were working for like 30 quid a check-in, you know? So by the time when I was doing it on my own, that was fine. I was making maybe 20 quid a check-in. But then when you start hiring people to help you and you're paying them whatever, 15, 16 quid and, you know, travel and, you know, you're losing money then.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think again, though, it's testing. It's figuring it out.
And we, just similar to you, I thought our fee was on a per individual basis quite high, but it's obviously it's a corporate entity that's paying for us and not an individual. But looking at what our competitors were charging, like, we are a fraction, and all our stats are a hell of a lot better in regards to helping them get into accommodation as soon as they arrive and different things. So yeah, it's just, you just need to, and I guess it depends again what market you're in. We're in a B2B play, so we can hypothetically go and try different fees or different fee structures with different companies.
Interesting. That's really interesting.
But
point.
The downside of that is if they talk, then one might be charged maybe 600 a head, one might be charging 500. But again, you can just explain, we're just trying to find out what our sort of range is and what people are willing to pay. But a consumer product, you can't really do that because everybody can access your services or your app, whatever it is. So yeah, but again, as we keep saying, like, I hadn't a clue. I still don't have a clue a lot of the time, but until you go out and talk to the world, you're not going to know.
What did you waste most time at when you're starting off? I think that's the key thing for entrepreneurs, isn't it? Anyone has is time.
Yeah.
So what did you waste the most time at?
I think about this a lot because you touched on it as well, because we actually sell time to our clients, but time is so important to us, and I probably honestly spent the guts of a year, I guess, sitting around and thinking, should we do this or should we try this, or oh, maybe I'm not doing this right. Just second guessing yourself, and you're not going to know anyway. You're not going to know what you're at, especially if you're a first time founder. But I think it was just sitting around second guessing and wondering. I was always probably big on a process. So what's the step-by-step process that you need to do to start a business? Obviously, I didn't know because I hadn't done it before. And there's no real clear guidelines of you do this first and then you do this, because everything's so different and there's so many variables that you can't control. I often say to Trish, my partner, like that first year, I could do that literally in a week. I could do that in a week now.
Yeah.
But again, you don't know that until you actually go and do it. I think just sitting around and then... I guess one of the big things that I sort of deliberated on was my background, as I said, is product management, and I guess I have a fair amount of experience of what it takes to build products, from be that an app or a web app. But one of the big things for technology companies is it's so bloody expensive to build apps, all singing, all dancing apps. But again, probably that 6 months in, 9 months in, I was like, do you know what? You have to get very comfortable and saying, I'm going to launch an MVP here, get something out to the market. We're still effectively using a pimped out WordPress. WordPress is the best invention in my eyes. There's no reason why, if you have a service business or even a lot of basic technology businesses, you can use a WordPress template. There's templates out there for freaking everything, from real estate companies to social media companies, to everything. Just use it and get that early feedback. I'm still very, very hands-on with our people who we actually help relocate, because they're the ones that give us the requirements that we feed back into the product longer term. So that was one of the big things. I was like, I'm just going to launch a WordPress here. I don't really care what anybody says. And companies don't ask, our clients don't ask, are you using a WordPress or are you using, did you build the app? They don't give a shit.
No,
they want to know that you're providing results and providing the value. So that's one thing that I had massive fear over at the start. And I actually met one of my former colleagues early in the piece. She's the development manager. She's like, you can't use a WordPress. Okay, but I think I can.
Yeah.
So and to be fair, she's super experienced. So I was like, geez, maybe I can't. But again, you're not doing anything wrong. You're getting a product to the market very, very quickly. So that's sort of what I did.
You touched on something really excellent there. I want to kind of come back on really quickly, because you just brought it up again, advice. And you were like, oh, I don't want to give advice. Everyone will give you advice.
Yeah.
How do you filter through the stories, the advice, the good advice, the bad advice?
It's so difficult, I would say. Especially... Again, I keep coming back to, I think there's a massive difference between a first-time founder and somebody who's been through the process multiple times. Because, and I never really understood that whenever we started talking to investors and trying to get investment in different things, I could never understand, why do they always want somebody who's done it before?
Yeah.
And looking at it now, it makes total sense. Yeah. Like, there's just so many nuances to the whole process that you just don't know until you do it at least once. So, and again, I'm still, this is my first business, so I'm still learning every day. And your head is going to get turned. My head's got turned so many times, because people are going to have opinions and they're going to be like, oh, why don't you do this and why don't you do that? I haven't found, again, to be honest, a really good sort of filtering mechanism for people giving me advice. And to be honest, one of my biggest negatives or biggest weaknesses was actually going asking people for advice, to be honest with you. I was so engrossed in doing what we're doing, I didn't reach out to other founders or people who've been through the process to see, what do you think I should do here, or different things, which is something I actually have set aside some time to do for myself now. But there's no, you just need to, I guess what I try and do is gauge what people have done in the past. You see so much bullshit now on LinkedIn's of people giving advice of like, this is what you should do. Just do a quick search to find out, what has this person done? Like, have they done anything? Have they started a business? Have they done anything that's sort of similar to what you're trying to do? And at least that's a vetting process of, at least you're talking to somebody who's been through the process.
Yeah.
I just don't really take meetings with people who
startup advisors.
Yeah. There's a lot of that goes on, and it's. I'm still trying to figure out: should I be listening? Should I be taking advice? Maybe I should be taking advice from startup advisors who haven't been through the process. Is there value that they can provide? I don't know. It's something I struggle with, but I don't actively go out and ask for advice from a lot of people or a lot of
advisors. You just have to get on and do it, like you talked about.
Because at the end of the day, what I found is your customers are going to be the ones feeding. I suppose you have to have your advice comes from your customers, and you have to have a pretty good funnel to capture that. It's not advice, it's requirements, what I call it. Because at the end of the day, if you're providing them with value, then you're on the right track. It's the other stuff, like maybe around managing people or fundraising, because that's obviously companies can't tell you about that. Like your clients can't tell you about that. So it's that other stuff. Maybe there's a place there for it. But in regards to what's going into your product or what's going into your service, I just listen to my customers. That's
probably the best advice. Then in terms of, right, okay, stage four is launch. And this is probably a stage that I'm probably not sure should ever finish.
Yeah.
I have it down as a separate stage in the process. But what are your thoughts on, like, you know, a launch? Do you need an official launch anymore? Or should you just be iterating all the time?
Oh, it still annoys me, and I'm a product person. I love products. I love building products and new products that people will use. But it annoys me when I hear of, I guess, founders who want to build the perfect. You always hear this perfect. Yeah. No, it has to be perfect before I go to market. It's complete nonsense. Like, because what you're doing is you're in a vacuum. You're building something in your head. And exactly what you said, that what is perfect, like, until you actually go to the market with something, you're not going to know, because your customers aren't going to tell you. So I would be just launching, and people don't care. You have it in your own head to know. I did this as well at the start, mind you. It's like, no, I won't launch just yet. I want to make sure the website's perfect. Nobody's going to give a shit. Nobody's going to go to the website. Like, it's exactly. Not like you turn on
first world problems.
Your website, 100,000
people,
like,
went there.
Oh no, I've got so many visitors, and they're going to see the wrong, no full stop here, or that's like nonsense stuff. Nobody's going to care. Like, so I think you have a bit of a blurb on your LinkedIn's and stuff, and one web page, then that's it. At least you have a bit of a presence then. Because I'm still doing this. It takes so much time to get noticed. Like there's so many people starting businesses too, and there's so many people trying to sell. There's never going to be a perfect time for a launch, and that's one thing I'll definitely never do. If it's this business or with future businesses, there won't be an official launch. It's different. Again, it might be a little bit different to if you're building some sort of artificial intelligence based product that you can't launch without the actual algorithms in place. That makes sense, but again, from my point of view, we're a service-based business, so like, just launch very, very quickly and capture the feedback and just take it from there. It's an iterative process. That's where I guess the ideas of sprints and sprint planning and backlog sessions and just putting in planning 2 weeks of work ahead and trying to hit different targets, that's sort of very valuable from an iterative approach. Anyway.
So you've launched, your product's out there. How do you get, we kind of talked a little bit about this, so we probably don't need to spend too much time on it. Testing and analysis.
Mm.
You're constantly testing and analysing, right?
Yeah. This is going to sound really stupid, but just a funnel to capture this. It's a free, we actually use this for everything from the managing of relocating employees to actually funneling the work that we need to do to analysis on customers. It's an app called Meistertask.
I'll get you to send that to me and I'll put it in the notes as well.
It's literally free. It's just, I guess, workflow management and a dump then for you to just put in requirements. So like last week I had a call with a global mobility, I'm just trying to remember if I'm allowed to talk about them or not.
It's a company X.
It's a company X. And literally, as soon as I get off the call, because I'm actually really, really bad at remembering shit. Like, if I don't write shit down, I'll be like, oh, no. Like, a week later, I'm like, I have no idea what the outcome of that meeting was. So I literally get off a call and just dump everything from my brain, because I'm big for note-taking, but I think it takes away from actually listening to the person you're having a conversation with if you're constantly writing notes. So I try and, just as soon as I finish the meeting, just dump it all there. And that's your testing, I guess, and that's the analysis of looking in then, okay, this customer said this and this customer said this. Is there some sort of connection? Is there some sort of similar problem they're all having? And then is there a solution that we can actually put in place very quickly?
So is that brain dump for yourself, or is it for the company, or do you share with the customer? Everything.
I would be sharing with a customer in regards to saying, if we had a sales meeting with another client, for example, I would be openly saying, this is actually a challenge that another company are having,
right,
and this is what they're actually doing about it. Because as long as the company X doesn't mind, you're not going to mention their name anyway, but knowledge sharing, I think, is important for the entire ecosystem anyway. So trying to be as open, and it's great for not only yourself, but people you're working with too, to see, why the fuck is he coming up with these ridiculous ideas?
Yeah.
Like, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
Well, it's coming from customer X, Y, and Z that have asked for it. So,
how often do you review and recap and look back on stuff you're doing or did?
I don't do this enough. There's, I guess, again, going back to sprints, every 2 weeks, there's a sprint retrospective where you actually sit down and look at the last two weeks, the work that you've done, the things you did well, things you did shitty, things that you could do better. Again, I've probably not done a good enough job of doing that. And I think it is important anyway, have a look back and just say, Jesus, we did this really, really well.
Mm.
Because it's such a difficult process, and there's so many ups and downs that you forget sometimes the good stuff that you've actually done, because you're just worrying about problems all the time.
I agree with that. Like, my missus is always saying to me, oh, you should enjoy this, you should celebrate it. I think at the back of your mind as an entrepreneur, there's always that fear.
Yeah.
And you always have to be looking forward in one way, in terms of, right, you have to be moving forward. But it's definitely a weakness I've noticed in myself in the last 12 months.
And actually, I found this as well with other... I've started probably the last couple of months going out and trying to, because I don't follow too many other companies or founders of their stories and stuff, because I to be so engrossed in what I'm doing, but I'm trying to do that more of that. And I was actually listening to one of the shows on Gimlet Media.
Okay.
You know, then the podcast.
I've heard of it, I haven't followed it.
I think they were just sold a couple of weeks ago.
Spotify just bought them. I think
they bought them. But the founder does a really, really great podcast, and I was actually listening to one was it last night or this morning? He literally records everything, right? Everything. And him and his partner, his wife, were actually in bed, and she couldn't sleep. She works in Gimlet as well.
Oh, lovely.
And so the two of them worked together, and she couldn't sleep, and he was like, oh, I can't sleep either. And they were just talking about...
And he's recording this.
He's recording of it, and he's like... Okay. Why are we so worried? Like, we're always worried. Why are we always so worried? Like, is this the way it's always going to be? And I think it is, because I think as you grow a little bit, and companies like that, as they grow, you're initially, as you start, you're only worried about yourself, but then you have employees, and then you worry about the employees.
Yeah.
Are they going to be able to pay them? Are they going to be able to look after the family? And then that just gets multiplied as you get bigger. So. Yeah.
So it's never over.
No,
it's never over.
I think I'm still trying to get through the process of. I guess you need a way up. Are you willing to go through that mental? Because for me, it is a bit of mental torture. That constant up and down. So if the answer is yes, then you're doing probably the right thing. Yeah. So.
And stage six, then the final stage: failing, scaling, or selling.
Interesting. So where do you want to cover, as in...
So I know you're under time pressure as well, so we'll just cover this off really quickly. How do you know, I guess this is the easiest question, how do you know it's working?
How do you know the business is working?
How do you know when it's that time, you've put in some time and you're like, is this working? Do we keep going, or do we just, as you say, pivot? Or do we just throw our hat at it and start again?
It's a really good question. I often think about this again, because, probably just because I am that first time founder, is... I think that's a constant struggle. I think it sort of touches on what we just spoke about around, like, once you have a good good day, you're like, oh, that's great, and all's going great. But the next day can be, or the next morning can be shit, and you're like, oh fuck, like, am I doing the right thing here? Constantly, and this is a process that I'm constantly, always thinking about. I don't think there's ever. Actually, I hate saying ever because I never say
yeah,
ever.
Yeah, I know.
I think
no
you just,
absolutes.
I think you just need to really take one day at a time, and hopefully we're going to continue to grow a little bit. But if we don't, and again, this is something I try to always bring it back to, like, nobody's dying. Like, if this goes tits up in the morning, obviously it is your baby, but if it dies, nobody actually is dying. Like, there's so many people. You have to, I constantly try and remember, Jesus, how lucky am I to be going into this meeting now, talking to this company about something that I started. And that does get lost for me. It gets absolutely lost or not. And I try and always find points of, like, it's a funny one, and it's pretty close to my heart, is my partner's sister died a couple of years ago. And I'd be like, Jesus, how lucky am I to be doing what I'm doing? And how wouldn't she love to be here too, living her life, you know? And you think your problems are difficult. A client, you have a shitty meeting with a client. That's nothing. Like, but it is hard to sort of reset your brain and be like, oh, no, it's like, because it is, you are all engrossed in it. Well, I'm all engrossed in it. But I think just trying to take a little bit of a step back. I started trying to meditate using Headspace.
Okay.
To try and, I guess, fine, because I said I am very sporadic. My brain is all over the place all the time, always thinking of different ideas, which we talked about at the start.
It sounds like I'm talking to myself here, yeah, having another monologue.
It's funny. It's and it can be torturous. So, like, again, I'm trying to find ways where just, is there a mechanism like meditating or something? It might not be for me, but I'm going to try it anyway for a few months and see, does this help sort of ground you and make it easier for you to reflect easier on things that have gone on in the past. But it's like it's constant. It is a constant struggle. Yeah. So you have to just be willing.
It's
to
perspective,
go through it.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think you summarized the whole thing beautifully there, in terms of, you don't know at the start, and you need to keep that grounding and that perspective, but you don't know what that perspective is at the start,
yeah,
because you don't know what's not working or what is working. So trying to, I think for me at the start, I was too engrossed in it. I was all I could think about and all I could do. And I put everything on the back burner for nearly 18 months. Whereas now I'm far more balanced in terms of sport,
yeah,
and gym, and spending time with partner and going for a walk and obvious day-to-day life stuff and, you know, family.
Yeah.
And just spending time. And having that perspective outside the business, I think that's really important.
Again, you're so right. Like, a Christmas time. So last year I calculated that I did 72 flights back and forward between London.
Wow.
And so it's effectively every week was going over. And at the time, you probably don't know how hard you're pushing it.
Mm.
And then at Christmas time, I literally crashed for 3 weeks. The man flu, issues with tonsils and throat and chest. And then I was like, I can't do this. You can't be pushing that. And again, actually, we had a CEO summit with our current investors there last year. And one of the other CEOs from another company, Johnny Britton, he was like, your company needs the best version of you.
Mm.
Because he and I was very much, yeah, I'm working fucking 100-hour weeks, aren't I fantastic, look at me. And that's a load of bullshit, because you can't keep going at that, because you will eventually crash. And he was just like, your business needs the best version of you, which is a healthy, in the right mind, and that's why you need to sort of be more balanced. So again, like you, I do have set time now for going to the gym and stuff, and I try not to be working in the evenings. I'm trying like a new routine where I get up really, really early, and if I can finish at 5, then I will. Then get to bed early then that night, and weekends then try and relax and not be working.
You can work forever. The work is never finished. Yeah. I think that's something I realized, is the work is never finished.
There'll always be something.
You know, it's not like you're digging a hole and filling it in again here.
Yeah.
You're doing something that is going to go on forever. And hopefully it will. But you need it's a marathon.
Yeah.
You need the old cliche, you need to just take your time.
The old bags under the ice, I'm too young for them.
Yeah. Oh, but you're right. You know, the whole thing about you crash, you push your body to the very limit and then you stop.
Yeah.
You go on holidays or you have a family event and suddenly...
The challenge though that I find with that is when you're in the moment, you don't know how hard you're pushing. Mm-hmm. So, and again, that's something I'm still trying to work out. What are the sort of points where you know, yeah, right, you're getting to a point where you're going to crash if you don't take it easy.
That's experience too.
Yeah, but and again, you'll... Well, I think 18 hour days for good is a start.
That's the first indication.
Hour days.
Yeah.
So I think the thing I'm trying to do anyway is just do your set days, and the evenings can be left to try and relax and spend some time with your friends and partner and all that lovey-dovey stuff.
Beautiful. And on that note, we'll wrap it up. Tom, thank you very much for coming in. Where can people learn a little bit more about you? And just tell us a tiny bit about the business as well,
yeah,
before you go.
So we've actually rebranded. So we were Property Base Camp. We're still actually going through a rebranding process, but you'll find us at Prelo, so Prelo.io. So it's Corporate Relocation Services. So effectively, companies who are relocating employees around the world, they utilize our app to manage the relocation, find accommodation, set up bank accounts, meet other people in new locations that are going through a similar process. So there's a whole community element to it there as well. So you'll find us at www.prelo.io.
And then in terms of following your journey, I know you have a podcast and you're quite active, yeah, on socials. So where can people see,
yeah,
that?
Yeah, LinkedIn generally. I do an awful lot of talking crap on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Haven't done the podcast in a while, but I'm going to fire it back up and again. And
what's that called?
The Ordinary Man. So everybody's like, why the fuck did you... What's this Ordinary Man thing about? So before you ask. So whenever I started this, because again... This is another point. I sort of before I started working in business, I was like looking at other people doing it, and you're like, oh my god, they must have something really, really special about them.
What's the superpower?
Yeah, and the more you talk to other people, you realize that there's probably nothing really special.
We're all figuring it out. So you've nailed it there. I think when you start to see people that are really successful, and then you get to meet them, and you're like, everyone's just figuring it out as they go.
No one really knows. And as I say, I'm very ordinary. Everything in my life has been very ordinary in regards to average grades, average at sport. It was very ordinary at everything. So I was like, I'm going to call myself the ordinary man. And then one of the lads is like, did you do that because it's a play on Tom, as in T-O-M?
Oh, very good.
And I was like, Yeah, that's why I did it. Yeah, that's why I did it. So that's what you call the podcast.
Where can people listen to that, Tom?
We had it up on Spreaker, so it'll be across all Spotify, Spreaker, iTunes, etc.
The Ordinary Man, that's Tom. What's the full name that people can search for?
That's it, The Ordinary Man.
The Ordinary Man, yeah. Perfect. And then on social, Instagram, things like that?
Instagram is The Ordinary Man, Twitter is TommyC15, and LinkedIn is just Tommy Courtney.
Beautiful. Tom,
thank you very much. Thanks for having
Pleasure.
Me. You're a gent.
That's a wrap on episode 2 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. It was a fascinating chat with Tommy. If you have enjoyed it, please do leave us a review on iTunes. It is much appreciated. See you in the next one.